What up, loungers? Welcome back. All right, so this week we are doing an interview. I am talking with Daniel from Dansun Photos. And what you're going to hear at the start of the show here is you're going to jump right into the middle of a conversation he and I were having. And the reason it worked like this was I was just trying to catch that raw, unfiltered conversation between us. And I think that made for just a better podcast because it was just like two old friends sitting down and talking. And that's what you got to hear. There was nothing really scripted. I had a couple questions written out, or not even questions, really. They were about his posts that he had put up. And you'll hear about those in the show towards the end. And one more last note. I had mentioned somebody's name in the podcast. And his name is Travis Howes. And if you're not following him, go look him up. If you are really interested in recovery with PTSD and things like that. And this dude is just, he gets it. And I think he gets it just like you guys get it. And so I mentioned his name and I butchered it. And so I'm just correcting it now before the show starts. So Travis Howes is who I was talking about. And other than that, I hope you guys enjoy the show.
That's okay.
But yeah, I got a full band there. And then I got a full band.
What's that? Banner of honor. I'll take that as a banner of honor for getting banned from social media. I got one of my posts got banned from Facebook too and became the most popular, one of the most popular posts I did.
Oh, yeah.
Because of it.
Yeah, I started posting a bunch of political stuff and things about COVID and it got pretty ugly and all of a sudden I went to log in and nope. You can't log in anymore. So apparently I was on the right track.
Yeah, right?
So
you tweaked somebody.
Oh, I rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. That thing really irritated me. So yeah. I don't know your stance.
The tattoos are new then.
Okay, it's
both sleeves. I got it all done at once.
Whoa.
And it's all my artwork. And it's actually all one piece. So it's all one big concept. Of trauma and recovery. So like even my fingers are opposite. So this is my recovery arm.
Yep.
And this is my trauma arm. So like my fingers are all even opposites of each other.
Wow.
And like the whole thing is
nice.
Angels on this side and a rope that goes, it's really cool.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, I saw your photo and your arms are crossed on your Facebook page and I'm all, I don't remember him having those before.
I know it's weird and I shouldn't even tell this to people because it sounds so stupid. I don't consider myself a tattoo guy. Right. Although I have two full season hand tattoos because I'm not looking for my next tattoo. I'm like, what am I going to get next? I don't want any more tattoos.
Yeah.
Like it hurts. I don't want any more. But I really wanted to get this concept done. I'm like, this is all one piece that kind of represents who I am and where I'm going. And I had it all done, got it finished, and then that's it.
Yeah. So I got some too. I got some as well. I actually did my forearms, and I don't know if you can. So I got two roses right here. And then on this side, I got two wolves. One's a smaller wolf, supposed to be seen as reflection of an older wolf in the water.
Oh, cool.
And my last one was 12 hours in the chair at one time, and I was like, I'm like you though. I'm not looking for my next one. That's it. I'm done. Like I don't need anymore. And same reason.
I'm not addicted to tattoos. I'm not like I think artistic wise they're amazing.
Sure.
And I like looking at them because I think it really is incredible artwork.
Sure.
And a lot of people get my artwork tattooed on them all the time.
Right.
And I love seeing that stuff. But yeah, for me, I'm not a tattoo guy apparently.
No, you're not. I would have never known.
I know, right? It's weird. Yeah, weird. Most tattooed, non-tattoo guy I've seen. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
And also, I shouldn't tell people that, but that's how I feel.
It's just
so ridiculous. But
I do the same thing, though. I literally say the exact same thing. I'm like, look, everybody's like, what's your next one? I don't have a next one. I don't want a next one. Yeah. I have one I might do, but even then, and it's kind of like your situation, what I want to do is I want to do like an angel and a demon fighting.
Yeah, that's what I have up here in my cover arm. So it's another piece I did of this angel. It's actually kind of St. Michael's got this giant sword and he's stabbing this devil right in the guts. That's really cool.
Very cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Alright, well, let's get started. I know you're a busy man. And
not today. I'm pretty open today.
Oh, do you?
This is great. All right. Well, it's a holiday up here. Is it a holiday down there?
Yeah, it's Labor Day.
It's a long weekend.
Labor Day.
Oh, yes, Labor Day for us too.
Okay. Yeah. So we're not going to labor today is what we're saying.
That's right. That's what I was going to say.
I actually quit EMS. I'm out altogether of the medical field. And
me too.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Good for you. Congratulations. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I actually went self-employed. And then a friend of mine who I used to be a fireman with called me up one day and he's like, hey, I need some help because I know you're not working. Can you help out? I'm like, absolutely, let's do it. So I help him out in the morning. So I'm going to be going over to his place here shortly, do some deliveries for him, and then I'm done for the day. So
okay, cool.
But I'm doing that more for him than I am for me.
Yeah.
So it works out.
Well, that's good.
But I'm enjoying the self-employment and no longer in the medical field.
I know, right? I know.
But like that's you, I'm still connected, even though I'm not.
Yeah, well, you always be connected. You're always, but it's but like what a, I feel so much better not.
Oh yeah.
Being continually traumatized.
Right.
Right. So it's like okay, it's you're trying to bail water out of a sinking boat with giant holes in it.
And it's yeah, a big boat.
If you keep getting traumatized, if you keep exposed, it's like getting stung by a bee.
Yeah.
And treating the anaphylaxis without removing the stinger, like in my case.
Well, yeah, you're a domestic abuse survivor that continues to stay in the relationship.
Yeah.
You know, just keep hitting me, sir. Yeah. Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Yeah. You know? Like a moth to the flame. It's like, I keep getting burned. Well, stop flying into the fire. But God forbid, if you tell us that, you know, maybe you should get out of the industry, then it's like you're telling me that I shouldn't be who I am. Right.
Right.
People get really pissed off at that. So, yeah, it's a sticky. For me, it worked out really well.
Yeah.
In my case.
You and me both. It took time. I actually created a CPR instruction company. And so great. We do BLS, ACLS, and PALS, and, you know, all that fun stuff. And so.
Oh, good for you. That's great.
Yeah. It's a cash cow, man. Let me tell you. It's like money over fist.
That's awesome. Yeah, because there's still tons of people. Even though there's a massive shortage, there's still lots of people still coming in.
Oh, yeah.
Thankfully.
Not just coming in, but still in.
That's right. And still in Adagrim certified, yeah.
Well, what's crazy is, and I'm sure you guys saw this too, and I, again, I don't know your take on it, and I don't want to, you know, step on toes or anything like that, but I actually had to hire an attorney to keep my job because of COVID and the vaccine and stuff. And so we saw a mass exodus. I mean, mass. We were losing 35 to 40% of our staff overnight.
Yeah. Yeah, and I did get vaccinated, but I was very against them saying you have to get vaccinated to stay. Like I thought that was horrible. We were doing daily testing when we came to work. It says, why don't you just, the people that don't want to get vaccinated, just test them before they come to work. And if they're not, then great. Then why do they, if they don't get vaccinated, don't. Like if your concern is safety of the crew and everybody else, if they come to work and they're negative, well then that should resolve that issue. Have them do it every time they come in. We do it anyways. We all have to come in and do it anyways.
Right.
So why not? What's the big, and a lot of guys quit over it.
Oh yeah.
I felt horrible.
I was ready to walk. At that point, I was ready to walk. And then I actually hired an attorney and we were able to keep our jobs. And then so I did a podcast on this, but long story short, my wife, my father-in-law and mother-in-law got so sick. They were maxed out on BiPAP. They were maxed out on Levofed. And I was 2 phone calls in one day. And on that same day, I was told in person that none of them were going to survive.
Oh shit.
Yeah, that's kind of what I said.
Yeah.
And fortunately, they all survived.
Wow.
But they were maxed
Any long-term effects?
My mother-in-law actually ended up with a cough for a year that she couldn't kick. And then we believe, and of course, nobody will admit it or confirm it, but she actually ended up having to have bilateral hip replacement due to COVID. It just deteriorated her. Yep, just completely bone on bone in the hip.
Wow.
And they ended up just replacing the heads on both femurs, and she's good to go now. But, yeah, she just finished her second surgery, a month and a half ago?
Wow.
And they got sick in 2021? 21? Yeah. This time in 2021. Oh, dude, it was horrible. It was the worst time of my life. But as soon as that finished, once everybody got out, we got everybody home, I took a leave of absence. I took a stress leave of absence for 3 months. And during those 3 months, I'm like, done. I'm not going back. And the wife looked at me and goes, okay. I don't blame you. So it was just, the whole thing was ugly for me. It was really ugly for me. And I was fortunate enough I didn't lose anybody.
Yeah.
But it was ugly.
Yeah. No, it was horrible for, God, thousands and thousands of people. Oh, yeah. Like emergency workers, I mean, for.
Oh, yeah.
You know, for whatever. Even whatever side that they're all, like, whatever they're pro or anti-vaccinate, sure. Like, it was horrible for everybody.
And my stance always was, look, I don't care what you do. You take care of yourself. You do what you feel is right. I'll do what I feel is right. And let's just continue doing our job, continue being human beings, decent human beings, and go about our day and not worry about it. But people couldn't do that.
No. I know, and then start forcing people to do stuff, that's getting scary.
Yeah, you guys had some big fights going on up there.
Ooh. Oh, yeah, we had some.
I was watching pretty close.
Yeah. Yeah, they were, I think we went to hardcore up here.
But, I loved it. Yeah. I loved watching every bit of it, though, man.
Oh, it was very entertaining, yeah. I was like, people had just latched onto something. I think it was, you know, people were isolating so long, and there's like a psychological, absolutely a psychological effect to that whole thing, right? They were isolating, you know, they weren't being in contact with anybody, so I think when everyone became really hypersensitive to certain things that they really latched onto hard. And they went full on.
Oh yeah.
Like, this is the hill I'm gonna die on.
Yep.
Yeah, it's it was a crazy time. Well, it still is, I guess.
So right, yeah. We're it's different times.
Apparently.
It's different times.
Yeah.
So all right, well, let's get started. Of course, I didn't bring my notepad with me, so I'm gonna have to go off of the hip, but I think I remember most of the stuff I want to talk about. So
I feel like we can probably just kind of talk for about anything, but
right.
I don't think we even need a script.
Right.
We just freaking sit here and gab for what stuff.
Yeah. So, well, you know what? Let's just do that. I'll figure out a way to integrate it. I'm not going to do like an intro or nothing. I'll do a separate intro later on without you.
Okay.
And just make it work that way. But let's do this. What? I know you've said before, but it's been 8 years and we have new followers now. So tell me a little bit about your background.
Okay. Well, I became a full-time paramedic firefighter in 2003. Became an EMT in 1996. And worked very happy as a paramedic firefighter, loved the job, didn't disappoint. I wanted to have a career that gave me a full life in the big show, and that certainly didn't disappoint. But over time, for me, I developed PTSD in a way that I didn't know was the normal way. It wasn't one event that happened for me, it was a gradual event. Until a psychologist kind of told me these are the symptoms that I recognized in myself that I didn't know, realize what was happening. So I got tested, got diagnosed in 2014 for PTSD, and that's when I started doing the artwork as part of my therapy. And that's how I purge these memories. And essentially what I'm doing is I'm processing those calls through artwork. And there's lots of different ways people can process them.
Sure.
But for me, I process them in this artwork. And I was always... Oh, sorry,
go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I always hoped that... Or how I thought therapy worked was you go there, they give you a pill, and then you're fine, and you... It's like, okay, yeah, they're going to do some Vulcan Spock thing where, you know, they're going to touch certain nerves on, and then you'll be fine, you go back to work. But no, you have to, like... Well, for me, I had to get in it. Like, I really had to get in it, face it, really be in it in order for me to unpack it. And then followed away. And so, that's how it worked for me.
Yeah, and I was going to tell you, you know, after our last conversation, I've been to therapy, and I actually went to therapy because of what happened with my wife and my family. And we did EMDR. I'm sure you're aware of that.
Yep.
I almost wonder if your drawings are similar to EMDR with the way you're focused and back and forth and, you know, the visualization and things of that nature. I'm wondering if that's a similar...
Yeah. Well, EMDR is kind of rebalancing the left and right hemispheres of your brain through eye movements and kind of reconnecting those parts. So it's essentially kind of building new pathways.
Right.
Hell, like, not... There's also, I don't think there's anything... The brain doesn't know what a good pathway is, a bad pathway is. The brain just knows their pathways. But So when we're exposed to trauma and that pathway gets used over and over and over, it turns into a, you know, 12-lane paved highway with no speed limit. And so trauma cars are like speeding down that 100 million miles an hour and slamming into your long-term memory. But the brain doesn't know that that's just doing what it does. But anyways, that was a weird tangent. But yeah, I think EMDR is, again, I don't know a lot about it, but it's rebalancing your brain. And for me, it was, now that I'm back in school and kind of learning a lot about the neurology and the neuropathology of trauma, there's an automatic thing that happens when we experience trauma. And it's supposed to be that way, so we don't have to think about how we respond to trauma. It's an automatic response, which saves us time. We're not going to sit there and look at the bear that's about to eat us and say, oh, should I run? Let's see, it's large, it's got big claws. Like, you just don't even think about it, you just run. Right, so there's an automatic response, and then the hormones get released, and you're, okay, now I got all this extra energy. You don't. But for me, when I had that trauma, when I would have that memory, then that response would happen. So I'd have the memory, and then I'd have the emotional response to it. Yeah. So a lot of time in therapy, the idea is to remove the emotional and physical response to that memory. So you can have the memory, but not the response to it. Right. So for me, in creating the artwork, I'm activating that process, that automatic process. However, I'm also using my frontal cortex to kind of interject. So I've kind of controlled it. So instead of like automatic breathing, you know, you can control your breathing, but if you don't think about it, it's automatic. So it's my frontal lobe went in there and started controlling how that trauma response is happening through the artwork.
Right.
So I was able to interrupt that process.
Yeah, kind of reprogram.
And that's yourself. What helped for me, for sure.
Yeah. That was awesome. Yeah, my therapy was, it was kind of half and half. It was just the, hey, tell me how your day's going, tell me what's bugging you, and then it became, and then it turned into the EMDR. And at first I'm like, this is a joke. There's no way this is going to work, you know. And for those who don't know what EMDR is, it's, they basically send a signal to, well, for me, it was I held these two little paddle type things, and it just vibrated left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right. And all the while it's doing that, you recall the image, or you recall and focus on what is bothering you at the time. And at first I'm like, I don't see nothing. It's blank. It's just darkness. And she's like, all right, well, let's do it again. And we did several sessions of it. And all of a sudden, like, I think on the second or third time I started doing this, I could see myself back in the ICU room with my wife and the doc telling me she's not going to survive. And all these things started rolling through my head. And I saw things that it was like my brain was putting two and two together. This is why this happened. This is what happened here. This is what happened here. This is why this happened, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And it was almost like it was explaining it. Well, like you said, unpacking. That's probably the best way to put it, is it just unpacked in my head. And I went, oh, okay. Yeah. And like you said, it pulled all that emotion out of it. And so I do have the memory. I don't have the emotions. And we can move on from that. But it got so bad for me. I don't know. I know we talked a little bit about signs and symptoms last time for you. For me, it wasn't so much lack of sleep. I know that. I think that was one of your bigger ones. You couldn't sleep before. And for me, though, couldn't concentrate. And so I knew it was bad when my wife goes, hey, we're going to go to such and such restaurant. And I looked at her and I said, I need you to put that on the map, on the GPS. And she goes, we go there every other week. It's 2 miles from my house. I've been there 1,000 times. I could not formulate a plan or a route to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, this is bad.
Yeah.
And that's when I knew, that was me hitting rock bottom, basically.
Yeah. That's how I went off the ambulance the last time. So I've been off the ambulance for a couple of years. Okay. And a psychologist told me I'm not going back, and I'm like, okay, that's, if you say so, I'm not going back. But I couldn't remember my protocols. I had a patient and I couldn't remember the dose for morphine. I've given morphine 1,000 times,
right?
I've done it so many times, and I looked at it, I'm like, I couldn't remember what the dose was. So I couldn't, so I looked it up and did, but I'm like, god, that's the first time, like, what's happening? I don't remember, right? I can't concentrate, thing, I can't focus on things, I can't remember things. So after that shift, I called and I'm like, hey, I something's wrong, I can't, this is going to be a detriment to my patients. And so when I've called, went to the doctors and they did a whole new test, and then started going through therapy, and like, yeah, these are new symptoms of the trauma you had, because I was being re-traumatized. Even though I was unpacking the trauma that I had, I was more traumas coming in all the time.
Yep.
Which is great because, well, for me, because I had lots of, and I still have lots of motivation to do artwork. Like that gave me a lot of material to create the artwork. But it started to, it's kind of like my brain said, okay, well, you're exposing yourself to this trauma. Yeah, you found a coping mechanism, but you're continuing to expose yourself.
Right.
So I'm going to have to do something because you're obviously not listening to the signs I've given you. So I'm going to start messing with your, with your memory and your concentration. Yeah. And
but it's weird though, isn't it? You can't recall a protocol, but you can remember a call to a T.
Oh, to the T, yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Just you know everything about it. And I know we had talked about that before. And
yeah,
you can still
that's like long-term memory versus concentration and
yeah.
It's like I'm really fascinated by that. I have a good friend who's actually going to be speaking at my conference in October. And she's an advanced critical care paramedic. She's got a master's of that. That's what they do in Australia. So she's got a master's in critical care paramedicine. And she's getting a second master's in neuroscience. And she's almost over halfway done now. And her focus is going to be on trauma and, you know, therapy. And so I really bug her a lot and I read all the papers that she does. And so I'm really interested in the neuropathology of trauma and memory and how all that works.
Yeah,
It's fascinating.
Yeah, no, it is. In just hearing a little bit about it from my therapist, was like, some crazy stuff. But it's weird the way the brain works.
Yeah, really weird. And we still really don't have any idea.
No, we don't.
Like, false, I guess. It's really like, who would think moving your eyes back and forth or concentrating on left and right would have that much of an effect, right?
It has a huge effect, though. I know a couple guys. I have a good friend who. 20-year retired Marine and just was in the horrible of horrific situations, and one of his jobs while he was overseas was body recovery during the war. And when you talk about PTSD, you and I have nothing on this guy. And I mean that in the nicest way, but you know, we do, of course, but he went through and he was like, it was amazing what he did for me.
Mm-hmm.
Something so simple, like you said, just that back and forth, left and right, and then boom.
Yeah. The only critical thing about EMDR is it doesn't work for everybody, but you do have to relive that trauma because you do have to recall that trauma.
Yes.
So some people don't respond really well to that.
Right.
And there's other methods that people can use where they don't have to recall it that way. But
sure.
So I'm a big supporter of EMDR, but I want to make sure that everyone knows that it's it's not
that's
for
a good
everybody.
Point. That is a good point. You do have to relive the incident.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I found, and I don't know if this is true, and this is what my therapist was telling me, though, because I was there, and I was like, hey, let me, you know, let's work on some older stuff. Can we do that? And she was like, at this point, it's so old for you. She goes, it's out. I said, but I still think about it. She's like, nope. There's no way we're pulling that out. It's been too long. And she basically was telling me that if I wanted to go back, you know, to my first PEDS trauma arrest or whatever, she's like, no, probably not. I'm like, I can still see it pretty vividly. I remember the kid's name. I remember where I was. I remember those details. She's like, probably not.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know if I was at a good therapist or not. But
That could be depends, I guess, how much experience they have. And therapists are just like paramedics. There's great ones and there's shitty ones, right? Just because you're a paramedic doesn't mean, even though we're held to the same standard,
right?
There's great paramedics and there's horrible paramedics. Just like therapists, there's great therapists and there's horrible therapists. But maybe your therapist really drew on a lot of the experience that they had and they just knew, right? So that could be a really good thing. Maybe they were right.
Or maybe I was just too much of a wreck that she didn't even want
to. Yeah, maybe like, no, man, we got too much to deal with right now. Let's not bring other stuff into it. Let's deal with what
time
we got
of death.
Here.
Time of death is. I'm still breathing. Yeah. Oh, you're done.
Yeah, let's just unpack one at a time.
Yeah. So you have, you guys have a symposium coming up.
We do. So we have a symposium coming up. It's October 22nd, 23rd, and it's a symposium that I put on myself every year. And what I do is I invite my peers or our peers that I meet through traveling that are experiencing post-traumatic growth, which is really the message I try to portray there, because it's not all doom and gloom and promote recovery and treatment and getting better. But what these people do, and I'm an example of this and you're an example of this, is changes, positive changes that happen because of the traumatic experiences that we have. Like for me, I wouldn't be on your show if I didn't wasn't diagnosed with PTSD and had trauma. Because if I didn't do that, I wouldn't be creating the artwork. And my life has completely changed because of the artwork, which wouldn't have changed, which wouldn't have happened if I wasn't traumatized. So I see myself as a post-traumatic growth phase. I'm better and doing more amazing things if I, you know, if that trauma didn't happen to me. So I see this in many of my peers. And so I invite them to come and talk about their experiences and how better their lives are because of that trauma. So it's a powerful message, I think, for people that are maybe right in their depths of it and kind of a dark spot where they really can't see. I call it being in like, well, my sister said when I was in the depths of it, she says, damn, when one door closes, another one opens. I'm like, yeah, Carrie, I know that. But she says, no one tells you the hallway's on fire. I'm like, yeah, that's true, right? So for the longest time, I felt like it was in this burning hallway and I couldn't see the exit. Right. So for people that are there and they hear from their peers, they're not psychologists, they're not therapists, they're not mental health professionals, they're us. And they're like, yeah, this is what happened to me. You know, things got really dark, but I found my way out. And because of that, these are the amazing things I'm doing now because of it. And that's a powerful message for people that are kind of in that dark spot. So it's something we do every year. It's a really powerful symposium. It's just a one-day symposium. I invite six speakers to come and talk, and it's a really fun time. Like, made it sound pretty dark there, but it is a really fun, positive, uplifting event. And then next year, I actually just formed a nonprofit. So I just formed the Recovery and Resiliency Foundation, which is a nonprofit. Uh-huh. We just applied for our charitable status. So next year, we're going to start putting that through our foundation, and we're going to make it grow and make it bigger and bigger and bigger. So that's very exciting.
Very cool. That's awesome. Yeah, that's actually, after going through my therapy and all that, that's when I decided to come back to social media. I took that break, and I think it was a very well-needed break. And there was a guy, I'm sure I would imagine you've heard of him, Travis Howitz.
Yes. Yeah.
So he was one of he was on the fire back east that lost a bunch of guys in the furniture warehouse fire. Trying to think of the department, but anyways, he was one of those guys. I can't even think. Anyways,
the name's super familiar.
He's been traveling around doing a lot of stuff with post-traumatic, and I'm trying to remember what he calls it, of course, and I can't remember nothing now. I was watching some of his stuff, and man, when he talks, and I listen to his podcast a lot. It's called "Create Your Own Light," and the more I listen to it, man, it's him. It's me talking. It's just, he can put it a little bit more eloquently than I can. And I'm just like, this guy's thinking and doing the exact same stuff that's going through my head every single day. And so listening to him, I was like, I got to get back into this. I do, because I have as much as I like to say I don't care about a lot of people, I still do, and it's just the way it is. But yeah, he kind of motivated me to get back into it, and so I kind of want to turn more. And I was big into PTSD and getting help and things like that before, as you know. Mm-hmm. And I just like, now's the time. Now's the time to get back into it and start.
There's a lot of power in shared experiences. A lot of, like, peer support's a word that's thrown around, and everyone kind of has different definitions of it. But to listen to a peer go through those experiences and really connect with that. Recognize yourself and what they're doing and see the positivity that they have I think there's way more power in that than having, and this is nothing against mental health therapists, I'm going to become one next year, but I think to have a psychologist or psychiatrist kind of analyze you and tell you what to do, of course is great, but I don't think, for me, it didn't hold as much power or authenticity than having a peer that's gone through the same things that I have and have recovered and learned how they did it. That's like, okay, that's, if they did it,
right,
then I can do it. I think that combined with you know, a therapist that has experience working with first responders, I think is a good mix, a really good mix.
Yeah, mine had no experience with this. And I think there was a few times she was kind of like, I think it's time for you to leave.
Yeah.
Because she started asking me stuff, and she's like, well, what are you thinking about? I'm like, well, I really don't know that I should tell you that, you know? And I think, you know, we keep saying we don't think therapists that don't have experience as first responders would work, but it does, because obviously it's working for some of us, and not all of us go through the counseling who have been through what we've been through.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And yeah, a good therapist, whether they have experience or not working with emergency workers who have the education to work with trauma, then they know, some of the stuff we might tell them could be pretty shocking for people.
Right.
But if they, and we learn a lot of this in school about, you know, controlling our own bias and, you know, counter transference stuff of, like, it's difficult to do. I think even for me, as an experienced paramedic firefighter, when I have clients and they tell me a story, it's going to be difficult for me to really keep my own balances in check, because some of this, I'm going to almost relate too much. So relating too much sometimes could be,
right,
you know, may not be great as well. So I think it's a fine balance. And a therapist can be great for one person and not great for another. Right, sure. So it really is, you have to kind of, and it's hard to find someone that you really jive with and really connect with to get the help that you need.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. I got my tablet. My wife brought it to me, so now I can.
Oh, okay.
Let me see here. You'd made a post, and it's been a while back. I went through your stuff. I like to do a little bit of research with who I'm talking to, of course. And you had posted back, this is actually back March of 2019, but you made a post about a thirsty horse.
Yes. Do
you recall that?
Yes, that's one of my favorite images. I think I have
that
one
hit in my gallery. That hit me like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
Just like, oh. And for those, since you know it so well, explain it. Explain the thirsty horse theory.
All right, so the picture is the horse. The horse is dying, so it's standing. Part of its fur is missing. You can see muscle tissue. It's a sick, dying horse, and on its back is this demon, and this demon has tattoos on it, like stigma, trauma, suicide, all these things for the negative sides of trauma. And when I do the artwork, demons represent trauma, and this horse is standing at a watering trough, and on the side of the water trough I put peer support. And the demon is blinding the horse, like it's putting its hands over the eyes of the horse. So the message is, and it was very personal to me. So for me, this horse is dying from its trauma. It's at its support, but it doesn't know that it's dying. It doesn't know that it's in trouble because it's being blinded by, essentially, it's lost the capacity to understand what's happening to itself. So it's not going to ask for help. So often in organizations, like, well, we have all these peer support programs, we have all these employment assistance programs. If people need help, it's here for them. But what if they don't need help? Which is in my case. I didn't know. I was suicidal and didn't know there was a problem. I thought, I'm going to kill myself and then I'll be okay. Why would I ask for help? I don't need help. Yet that's what happens in trauma. That's what happens to your brain chemistry. That's what happens to the neural pathways. You lose the capacity. So this picture of the thirsty horse is the horse is at, its help is there, but it doesn't know that it needs it. And that's what happened to me and to so many other people. And when I talk to organizations and I travel and they tell me about all the amazing programs that they have, I'm like, okay, well, what preventative or methods do you have? Like, what preventative programs do you have? And they're like, well, what do you mean? Says, if people need help, they'll come. I'm like, well, if you go fishing, you can't expect the fish to jump in your boat, right? You have to fish for them. So, like, track calls, we write down every call that we go on. So, like, gee, if you go on a call, if you and I are partners, and we do 3 pediatric suicides in a week, you know, that should be flagged, right? If you have a peer support team or human
one
resources.
One should be flagged, let right? alone 3.
They should be, hey, we should check in on these guys just to see. And yeah. 9 times out of 10, we're going to like, yeah, no, we're fine. But psychologically, we know, hey, they're watching us. They're seeing if we're okay. Yeah. And that's, so there should be, like, that's a preventative way of, like a prophylactic way of looking out for your crew. So that was the idea of that. Yeah, that's one of my favorite. I actually have that one. That's part of my large exhibit, large format exhibit. So when I travel, like in January, I'm going to be in Minnesota, and I have 13 pieces, and they're like 8 feet by 12 feet. They're massive.
Wow, that's like, awesome.
So that one is life size, and to stand in front of that thing when it's life size is pretty powerful.
Yeah,
that's one of my.
I think one of the things in that post. One of the things in that post that caught my eye too was your tick box idea on the tablets. And for those wondering what that is, it's just basically at the end of your run report, do you want help? And you just click the box and then somebody will be in contact with you and hopefully set you up with some help.
Yeah, that's,
I think
that's
a phenomenal idea.
Yeah, they do that in parts of Australia. They do that. Like easy. I tried to set that up here where I'm from, but management told me, well, we have to decide on where that information is going to go. I'm like, no, that defeats the whole purpose. The right. whole idea is the only people that see that are the peer support team. Those are the only people, and they say, well, no, we want to track that. I'm like, well, no, that's defeating the whole purpose. Like, do you want
HIPAA violation too?
Yeah, do you want to track?
Well, I don't know if you guys have. Do you guys have HIPAA over there?
Well, we have something similar. It's okay. Yeah, it's similar to that, but they wanted to track to see who was asking for help. I'm like, well, no, management. The whole idea is management should know. And if your purpose is to help people, then, you know, if you know that this is going to help, then why do you need to know? Right? Because they won't. People are not going to tick the box if they know that management's going to get involved and potentially affect their job.
Right.
So unfortunately, I couldn't make that happen where I'm from. But I think it's a great program.
Yeah. No, I think it sounds like it needs to be done everywhere. One of the other ones that you posted was July of 2020 about nightmares.
Okay.
Yeah, and you were talking about... You used to look forward to sleeping, but you'd stay up as late as you possibly could so that your transition from sleep to being awake was limited to lower the, basically to stop the nightmares or to limit how many you're going to have in a night.
Yeah, so that, and I'm better now, but yeah, I used to look forward to sleep. Like when I was younger, I was like, it's bedtime, it's great, I'm going to relax. But yeah, I didn't, and there's that transition time between, you know, when you're trying to fall asleep. And for me, it was, if I lower my conscious defenses, like if I try to open my mind, then all this weird stuff would come in. Like all these invasive thoughts would come in once I lowered those defenses. So in that transition time when you're trying to fall asleep or you're lying down and you're trying to turn your brain off, when I did that, I would just get attacked by all these invasive images and emotions and stuff, so I couldn't do that. My ex-wife now, she was a yoga teacher, and she would say, Daniel, just relax, just breathe, you know, just open your mind and meditate. And I'm like, I can't, because if I open my mind, then I just get invaded. So I would have to stay up really late, or I'd have to have white noise on, or I'd play games on my phone until I was falling asleep while playing the game, put it down, then I'd fall asleep instantly. So I wouldn't have to try to fall asleep. And just finally, just only a few months ago was the first time I had like a weird dream, and I was so excited. It was like this weird dream of like this octopus, like underwater, that was like playing a kazoo. It was like the weirdest, like purple. It's the weirdest thing. And I was so excited, right? I'm like, God, that's the first weird dream I've had in 15 years. Like, I was so excited. Like, that's the dream of a normal person that, you know, isn't. Right. So I was really excited to have, like, a normal, weird dream and not a dream about, you know, death or trauma or horrible emotions and stuff. So it was, I was really excited. And that was the first time. And that just happened a couple of months ago after 2 years being off car.
So let me ask you, because for me, my nightmares aren't EMS related, none of them. And believe me, I've had a ton of nightmares. I used to get them every single night, multiple a night, but not a single one has to do with EMS. Mm-hmm. But it has to do with family.
Yeah.
Every single one. And so I don't relive the calls in my dreams. I don't hear things in my dreams or anything of that nature. But, you know, when my daughter was born, one of the first ones I had was we were, and I remember vividly, in my wife and I were on a street corner in San Diego. We were about to cross the street. My wife hands the baby to a stranger, goes, "Here, hold her real quick. I got to do something." And then when we turned around, my daughter was gone. Mm-hmm. And the lady was gone. And I'm like, what the heck? But those are the type of stuff I would have, but not a single one related to EMS.
Yeah, me too, actually. Like, it wasn't I never had flashbacks. I never had, but my brain kind of knew what things would disturb me the most and stick that in my head. And I think,
there you go.
Again, I'm just learning about this stuff, and like, if for those neuroscientist geeks out there that are going to tell me how wrong I am when it comes to neuropathology, this is what my take is on it, and I could be wrong, and I'm still learning. But I think what happens is because of the previous trauma that we've had, experienced on the ambulance or in emergency services, that trauma neural pathway is so well traveled, and there's so little resistance on that neural pathway that it's just, that's the path that's gonna take. So when you have nightmares, then if you have this thought of a nightmare, it's like, okay, well, let's go down this pathway. It's easy. It's already been driven on 8 million times. So when you have those other thoughts, then it's just going to go down that pathway. And it's just because it's an easier, less road of less resistance to travel down.
Yeah.
So the other things do really traumatize us, or really disturbing images or things that would really upset us, it just goes down that pathway because it's already there. And that's kind of what is most prevalent for me, that pathway of trauma. So that's where all this stuff went. And it wasn't, you're right, it wasn't always work-related. I never really had flashbacks, but my brain kind of knew.
I've never been.
This is what's going to mess down. Like, this is the disturbing exactly. thing. So it builds it. Instead of it just kind of disappearing because it's got no place to go, it's like, oh, look, here's this giant 12-lane paved highway of trauma. Let's just go down there. So it's like, bam, like, holy smokes.
Yeah.
That's what
one thing like. One thing I found doing a podcast about nightmares back when was food that we eat at night has a huge impact on what you dream about.
Really?
And I started doing some research on it, and sure enough, food, what you eat at night, changes everything.
Really?
Yeah. If you have time, do the research, or just go back and listen to my old podcast. It's called Got Nightmares, Me Too. And they can still be heard on Spotify. But like cheese. Cheese is like a trigger for nightmares. And stupid me, I love cheese. And so, you know, no wonder I'm having so many nightmares. I'm eating, you know, half a block of cheese as a snack before I go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
God, I wonder what I ate before I had that weird octopus dream. If I can remember, I'll buy more of that stuff.
Right. And so one of the things I wanted to touch on with that was, for me, it's shellfish.
Really?
Shellfish, that's really interesting. For me. But here's the thing. I can't really call it a nightmare. It's an LSD trip for me. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about this octopus underwater. My dream would be like an octopus climbing on top of my house while eating a cat, and, you know, something like that. And you're just like, I know I'm safe and I'm not in any danger, but why is there an octopus eating a cat on my house? You know, but I have full on acid LSD type trip dreams if I eat shellfish. And so now I just stay away from them because it gets weird.
You know, that's interesting because I was always trying to find ways to help me sleep. So I started listening to binaural frequencies to help me sleep.
I have recently, too.
Right. So at first, I was like, wow, that was amazing. Like, it really helped at first. But then I started having the weirdest dreams, like disturbing stuff. So I had to stop doing it because it would take me down. Like, it started working at first. But, yeah, it really affected the way that I was dreaming. First positively and then kind of got a little bit too deep and scared the crap out of me, so I stopped doing it.
You know what gets me is melatonin, taking too much melatonin. But what's weird is, so one of the things for COVID is that it's an anti-inflammatory, apparently, when it comes to COVID. And so when I got COVID the first time, I was freaking out, and I started taking melatonin because we didn't know what was going to happen. I had it very early on, and I popped some melatonin, only 5 milligrams, which is your typical average starter adult dose. Yeah, 5 milligrams, no big deal. One time. One time, I'll never take that stuff again. Man, I had the worst nightmares on that stuff. Wow. And, of course, me, I go back through and look it up. Sure enough, guess what an overdose symptom is of melatonin? Nightmares.
Really? I'm really interested in sleeping and dreams, and something I really want to incorporate into my practice, especially for people with trauma. And I know a lot of the initial treatments for that when you study is to start a dream journal. Mm-hmm. Right? So for my clients that, you know, are having nightmares due to trauma, is I'm going to have them, journaling is also just on itself is a good thing to do, but is I'm going to have them do a separate dream journal and then bring them to sessions. And then we can really kind of get into it and analyze and see where, you know, before the dream dissipates in the morning, because sometimes they may forget. Apparently, if you wake up in the morning and you're remembering your dream, and this is probably just a suggestion that people remember, but if you look at a window, you instantly forget your dream.
Really?
Yeah, try it. Everyone that's listening, try it. So when you wake up in the morning and you're remembering your dream, like you wake up like, oh, that was a weird dream, look at the window and your dream will instantly disappear and you'll forget completely what it is.
That's so weird.
That, I know, the I brain thought it was garbage.
Like you said, like, we know nothing. Whatever.
Yeah. But I did it. I'm like, and that's probably just happening because now I suggest, put that suggestion in everyone's head, right? Like the person who told me. So I know I've already imprinted it in my brain that that's what's going to happen. So when I do it, that's what's going to happen. But yeah, it's really interesting. So try
it. I'm going to try that.
Yeah, try that.
I'm going to try that next time if I can remember. Interesting. Well, I'll be your test subject if you want your first client, if you want to do that.
Sure.
With the dreams.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think that's, I'm really interested in how that, and I think there's a lot to be said and a lot of information in there for us that are experiencing trauma and how it's reflected in our dreams. Because like you said, for you and me, the dreams we had really weren't about the actual events that we had, yet they were still really disturbing. And for me, it was like my brain knew what was the most disturbing things for me, and it just popped it in my head, even though it wasn't nothing I've seen, but it was still very, very disturbing. And for you,
It's
like the same thing. It was like, what is the most disturbing thing? We're going to shove that in there.
And yeah.
It just takes that big wide pathway, slams it into our memory, and we don't forget it.
Yeah, I was on a 12-lane highway with a Ferrari topped out at about 220 miles an hour.
You know, it's another really interesting thing that I've read is that I shouldn't have brought this up because I don't have the notes on it to be exact, but if you have high serotonin, and how many of us are on SSRIs because of depression, so our serotonin levels are higher, when we have a traumatic experience, if you have higher levels of serotonin, it imprints more permanently in your long-term memory. So for those of us that are experiencing trauma, that are depressed, that are on SSRIs, that have high levels of serotonin, when we get traumatized, we get really traumatized.
So we're making it even worse.
They make it even worse. So it's a really interesting study that's happening.
Interesting.
Like I said, I wish I would have the notes.
Well, it's a vicious cycle, and it's nothing different than what we do to ourselves anyways every day by waking up, putting our boots on, and going back to work and running more calls and getting more traumatized.
Yeah.
It's just what we do.
It's fascinating.
Right?
Yeah,
I just did a show. It came out last week, and it was first responders with ADHD.
Oh yeah,
and it was amazing what I found on that.
Yeah,
and first responders are 5 to 6 times more likely to have it than the general public.
Yeah,
I mean, just and I think it play. I honestly think that plays into it because our brain is in overtime, and I think that's part of our trauma issue. You know, when we get that traumatization and then our brain starts, like you said, you can't quiet your brain at night. You've got the ADHD kicking in and you're like, what about this? What about that? Hey, let's talk about what happened 12 years ago on that call, shall we? You know.
You know what's even more interesting, G? If you go even farther back with the emergency, how much do you know about the ACE test, like the adverse childhood experiences? Do you know anything about that?
No.
It's so the ACE study is, it's a 10 question, I think it's 10 questions, and it is quite accurate predictor on how, like, on addiction and developing traumatic experience, like traumatic symptoms. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of based on, you know, there's only 10 questions and based on your childhood experiences. Okay. And I think they did this study. Again, I'm pulling up all this stuff. I should have notes so I can actually be more accurate what I'm saying. But I believe they did this study in California with firefighters, and they found that many, higher than the normal population of firefighters, had high ACE scores. So that the kind of the suggestion there is that people with adverse childhood experiences are drawn to emergency services work.
Right, but here,
if you have a higher ACE score, then you're more susceptible to trauma. So if we're talking about the moth flying into the fire, right? So then maybe that ADHD, potentially, maybe we're susceptible to that because of high ACE scores, which just, when we go into this field where we want to help people because of maybe our high ACE scores, makes us more susceptible, but maybe it also makes us more susceptible to developing ADHD, or maybe, so what my point is that maybe those seeds are already implanted, they're already there, even before we got into emergency services. Really, again, super interesting. But yeah, it's a really interesting study. It's only 10 questions, and it's scarily, accurate.
With only don't worry, questions. I make up words all the time.
Yeah, but people know what I mean. May not be a real word, but you get it.
It's funny because after I did the podcast on the ADHD, I was thinking I wanted to look into first responders and trauma in their childhood. I mean, I literally was thinking about looking into that. And when I go back to my traumahood.
See,
another word. Make up words too. Traumahood.
I totally understood what that means. That should be a word. Your childhood traumahood. What was your neighborhood like? You mean my traumahood?
Listen, we're gonna coin that phrase right now.
We totally should. That's a great word.
We own it.
Yeah.
We own it. Trauma.
Tell me about what your trauma hood is like, your neighborhood of trauma. That's great. I love it.
You know, and for those, and I won't go on it on a lot of detail, but I had what I thought was a good upbringing, but single mom, dad left when I was two, and then I start looking back and I go, how did I not end up hooked on drugs, dead, or in jail by the time I was 18 years old? If people heard my story, they'd be like, there's no way. But then you also got to think back too, is there is no perfect childhood.
No.
Right? I mean, everybody has some type of trauma during their childhood, except maybe my wife. She's like, grew up in the beaver home. But yeah, it's interesting you brought that up, because that was something I was going to look into anyway. So I'm going to check out that ACE test. I want to take it and see how it turns out.
Yeah. It's only 10 questions, but it's really accurate. I'm just going to look it up here, see if I can find it. But look it up. It's really, really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You can just go online and actually take the ACE quiz. Okay, I got the. Do we have time? I'll tell you 10 questions right now.
Yeah. Well, real quick, before you do that, what I wanted to say was it's that whole moth to a flame thing. Going back to that is we get traumatized as kids, and then what do? We just continue looking for it and continue going and going up. There's more trauma. Let's go check that out.
Right.
Oh, look, there's more. Let's go check it out. But it's that I think for a lot of us in this industry, we got hurt so bad as children, we don't want other people to go through it. And we're trying to save the world.
Yes, we're drawn to it.
Which creates more problems for us, and then it eats at us because we get that survivor's guilt, and then that rolls into something else. And again, the moth to the flame over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah. It's going to be one of my newer... it's a concept I'm going to do, that moth to the flame. I'm building it right now. I have to do a photo shoot for it. So it's going to be a dance on piece soon.
I'm looking forward to it.
And the write-up is going to be about the, you know, if you have high ACE scores, you're drawn to, I have to get my facts right and cite proper studies and stuff. But I just find that really, really interesting. But
all right, let's do the ACE test.
Okay, so there are 10 questions, and they're just yes or no, I believe. So... for each yes answered, add one. The total number at the end of your cumulative number of aces before your 18th birthday. So this is before your 18th birthday. Did a parent or other adult in the household often or very often swear at you, insult you, put you down or humiliate you, or act in a way that made you afraid that you might be physically hurt? That's number one. Two, did a parent or other adult in the household often or very often push, grab, slap, throw something at you, or even hit you so hard that you had marks, that left marks when you were injured? Three, did an adult or person at least 5 years older than you touch or fondle you, or have you touch their body in a sexual way, or actually have oral, anal, or vaginal intercourse with you? Four, did you often or very often feel that no one in your family loved you or thought you were important or special, or your family didn't look out for each other, feel close to each other, or support each other. 5, did you often or very often feel that you didn't have enough to eat, have to wear dirty clothes, and have no one to protect you, or your parents were too drunk or high to take care of you or take you to the doctor if needed? 6, were your parents ever separated or divorced? Well, that's going to be most of us, I think. 7, have...
But this is before you're 18.
This is before you're 18, yeah, before you're 18. 7, was your mother or stepmother often or very often pushed, grabbed, slapped, or had something thrown at her? Or sometimes, often or very often, kicked, bitten, hit with the fist, or hit with something hard, or even repeatedly hit over at least a few minutes, or threatened with a gun or knife? 8, do you live with anyone who was a problem drinker, alcoholic, or used street drugs? 9, was a household member depressed or mentally ill, or did a household member attempt suicide? And 10, did a household member go to prison?
So well, I scored a 7 out of 10.
Right? And so most the sexual emergency abuse workers, stuff. Most emergency workers will, well, on according to the study, are pretty high. So yeah. Based on what your score is, and on here, I just kind
of
searched
it. 7 out of 10, everything but the sexual abuse.
Yeah, and I think, I'm guessing that's probably higher than normal. But maybe not for, maybe not for, maybe not for emergency workers. Anyways, I'm doing more research on it, and there's actually there's been a lot of studies done on it. But for only 10 questions, yes or no questions, it's really quite accurate in its prediction.
Yeah. Interesting. I'm going to review that too. I want to look into that.
Yeah. Adverse childhood experiences score.
Yeah. Interesting. Very interesting. What else you got coming up?
The conference is the big one, and then the symposium. We're really excited about that, and we have speakers from all around the world coming to talk about their growth and the cool things they're doing. And then traveling, so I'll be at EMS World. Well, a couple of weeks. I'm not quite sure when you're going to air this, but EMS World 20 in New Orleans. I'll be there, which I'm excited. I'll be in South Carolina. I'm going to be in Maine, I believe, later this year, exhibiting and speaking on my artwork and post-traumatic growth and recovery. And then I have a large format exhibit where all of my large format pieces, like 10 by 12 feet, will be exhibited in Minnesota in January.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, it's really cool. I'm really happy when people want to exhibit that because it's quite powerful. Yeah. It's all life size. And then school, I'll be graduating next year as a counseling therapist, registered counseling therapist, and then, our foundation, our nonprofit, hopefully charitable status nonprofit, will be starting up next year.
Cool. Do me a favor, send me as many links as you can to all this stuff that you have.
Okay. Yeah, I have it. All the time.
It doesn't have to
my events are on my webpage. So if you go to events, all this stuff and links to the events are there.
Okay. What else was I going to tell you? EMS World next year.
Las Vegas.
Is Vegas. Mm-hmm. And I can't say a whole lot because there's some planning going on. But think social media, EMS and fire. We're working on something big. And so I may be there. There's things in the works that I don't want to talk about because they haven't been completely squared away yet. But I'm hoping to get out there. Vegas is like 2.5 hours from my house. It's a quick drive. Nice. I've been wanting to go, but I was basically invited by somebody to go.
Great.
As G, the social media guy, the meme creator that I've been in the past.
Meme. Not the mean creator. The meme.
No, there's that too, trust me. But it's meme, M-E-M-E.
So. Yeah.
But, my biggest thing that I want to get known for, I don't want to be known as just a guy who makes meme. I want to be known as the podcaster. I mean, this to me is what I like doing. I love interviewing you, and I did Holly Sherman from Nightwatch.
Oh, yeah.
I did an author. He does some pretty cool books about EMS named, I don't want to give the wrong name because he writes under a pseudonym, so I don't want to give out the wrong name. So I'll keep that quiet with who he is, but you can go back and hear those ones. And so I enjoy doing that, and I want to get to the point where you are. I've always wanted to do like the public speaking and things like that. So I think that, because I think that makes the biggest impact. I can sit here and do a podcast all day long, but until somebody sees you in person, I think that makes the bigger impact.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. I really look for it. I still get nervous when I go up there, and because I just talk about my own stuff, and that's, you know, no one's a bigger expert on me than me. So I just share my experiences. But I'm building workshops. So as a therapist, I'm going to start building workshops. I'm going to focus on substance abuse and addiction, grief, trauma, spousal support, because spousal support or interpersonal relationships, that's one of the biggest risk factors. If you follow Dr. Olivia Johnson on her Fatal 10, where she actually is investigates suicide, she's one of the few suicide, she could do a suicide autopsy so she could investigate and cause and realize the cause of it. And she's come up with these Fatal 10, and the number one is interpersonal relationship issues as being common risk factors, and substance abuse and addiction. So those are a couple of things that I really want to focus in, and that's what I'm going to be building. That's what I want to build these workshops on, in addition to my artwork, is to develop workshops to help people support them in interpersonal relationships and substance abuse, addiction, and that type of stuff.
So even though you're off the box, you're still wanting to help people.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Damn, moth to a flame.
Yep. That's right. I'm just doing it in a different way.
Just doing it in a different way.
Yeah.
But you're stopping the trauma on yourself, at least, and that's
really is important. Yeah. Yeah, and I love it. Like, I'm passionate about it, as most emergency workers are. I think they're really passionate about the work that they do.
Sure. Like you said, and I don't even remember if I was recording when you said it, but it was, you know, water going into a boat, and you're trying to, you know, shovel it out.
I was drilling holes in it.
You don't have a big enough bucket to get that much water out.
Yeah, and you're not really concentrating on plugging the holes. You're just concentrating on emptying the water, which... just is really, God, we can do a whole podcast on that, on operating in the disease model, which what we do, it's very reactionary. For we talk about mental health and, okay, if this is what happens, you know, when this happens, this is what you do, versus, okay, what preventative measures can you do to prevent that from happening, or building, you know, resiliency. We don't really spend a lot of time on that. So we operate on a disease model of reacting to what, when it happens, versus a preventative model of, okay, this is what you should do to prevent these things from happening. And there's a lot of controllable stressors that we can mitigate, but we don't really seem to talk a lot about that stuff.
All
which is weird.
Well, I don't want to take up too much more of your time. This has been a good podcast. I'd like to continue talking. A couple of things here. Number one, if you ever need a speaker for one of your events, please call me. The other thing is, if you want, I mean, I know I'm calling you out and I can edit this out later, but let's do more. Are you able to do more of a regular podcast thing where you and I can come on and actually talk like this more often?
Yeah.
Maybe once a month. I'm not saying like once a week or anything like that, but even if it's just once a month, or we can just get together and talk about this stuff, I think it'd be helpful.
Yeah, if, again, if I have time. So,
yeah, of course.
And you can, but yeah, I would. I love talking about stuff like this. I love going on podcasts. I like, I really enjoy it. And,
okay.
And, you know, the more people that can listen to it, because these types of, you know, when we talk about these things, it normalizes it in a way, where the more people that can hear us, like two experienced guys like you and me, talk about what's happening, it kind of, okay, well, if these two guys are experiencing these things, you know, and they're doing okay, and they're talking about it, well, then maybe it's okay to talk about that stuff, and it's not so weird, and shouldn't shovel it under the carpet. It's
right.
Face it and talk about it and deal with it. That's what podcasts do, I think.
Yeah. DanSunPhotos.com, am I correct?
That's right.
Check him out, DanSunPhotos.com. Look him up on all the social media platforms. I know he's on Facebook and Instagram for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But go check him out, follow him, buy some artwork, help some people out, because I know a lot of his stuff, he does donate a lot of the profits to getting help for first responders. I know years ago you were donating all proceeds to getting somebody to your symposium. And so, guys, just check him out. We're going to try to, like you heard him, we're going to try to make this a little bit more regular. We can talk about just this type of stuff. And the one thing I want to end on with this podcast is go get help, even if you don't think you need it. I promise you, if you've been in EMS or fire for any amount of time, you've ran any type of traumatic call, you could use some help. I promise you. And you'll feel 10 times better. Don't wait till you're like Daniel and I, where we're 20 years in and we're going, I wish I would have gotten help earlier. Don't do that. Do it now. Get some help. And listen, when you go get help, nobody has to know you're getting help. So stop thinking you're going to run into somebody in therapy, like you're sitting in the lobby and you're going, oh, I know this guy, and then he's going to talk. No, nobody's going to know you're there. Nobody has to know. Just go get the help. I promise you, you're going to feel 10 times better. I went and saw some old coworkers the other day, and it was the first time I've laughed and had a good time in years, because I got the help, and then I finally recognized it, and I went and got help. So go get help. Nobody needs to know. It's all HIPAA violations. I can't tell nobody. They're not going to call your employer. They're not going to call your girlfriend or your boyfriend. They're not going to call your friends and be like, hey, guess who came into therapy today? They're not going to do it. So stop being embarrassed by it. Stop thinking you don't need the help, because you probably do.
It's just like physical checkups too, right? No one.
Yep.
Like, we're supposed to, well, I guess it depends how old you are, but you know, you should be getting a physical checkup every year, every 2 years, every 3 years, depending on
maintenance.
Especially as emergency workers, like just for maintenance, but no one seems to think that's weird. It's like, oh yeah, I need to get my physical, I'm going to check my blood, make sure everything's okay. But for some reason, we don't do that for a mental health checkup. It's weird. Like, why would you do that?
Well, and if you fix your mental health, your physical health will improve as well.
Yeah. So even if you do feel great, just go get a mental health checkup.
Yep. Absolutely. Any final thoughts?
God, I think we covered a lot of stuff. Mostly what you said, yeah, it's everyone take care of themselves. I like to tell people that, you know, if you're feeling great now, just be prepared, because I'm a big proponent of preventative measures. Of, you know, what's your treatment modality? Like, what makes you feel good? Do you like walking through the forest? Do you like working out? Do you like doing yoga? Do you like working with wood? Figure out what that thing that makes you feel better while you have the capacity to figure it out. And it's almost like creating your mental health jump bag. Like, okay, when you wake up in the morning and you don't know, you can't remember who you are, or you can't remember, you know, the directions to places, when your brain is starting to get a little bit impaired, have something that prepares, like, okay, I'm prepared for this day. This is what I'm supposed to do. These are the numbers I'm supposed to call. This is a trusted friend that I can call. You know, these are the opportunity, or these are the benefits that I have, or the opportunities that I have that are available to me. Take advantage of that stuff, but prepare it before that happens. So you put in a little file somewhere, and this could be like, okay, this is my jump bag when if I start to get impaired because of trauma. I wrote everything down that I should be doing while my brain was healthy.
Yep.
Preventative measures. I like it.
All right, my friend. Well, listen, it's good talking to you again.
Yeah, you too. And it's great.
Hopefully we can make this a little bit more of a... Yeah, and hopefully we can make this more of a regular thing. I think it'd be helpful.
Yeah, me too. So,
all righty. Appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. Daniel from Dan Sun Photos. Go check him out. Other than that, I have nothing more for you. Have a good one and keep lounging.